Inside the Friendly Confines with Jesse Rogers, presented by Arlington Toyota. Looking for a smart play on your next vehicle? Arlington Toyota delivers with a full lineup of dependable cars, SUVs, and trucks ready for Chicago drivers. The same trusted team you've known for years is now backed by new ownership from the Andy Moore Auto Group, bringing even more value every day. Visit ToyotaArlington.com today.
Welcome to Inside the Friendly Confines with Jesse Rogers, a Cubs-centric podcast brought to you by Good Karma Brands, ESPN 1000, and our friends at Arlington Toyota. Glad to have you on board as we tape this episode on Thursday morning. I like taping on the off day. It gives us a chance to reset as the Cubs play some divisional games coming up after some interleague play. No guest today, so it's just you, me, and producer Jack McGrath. I want to bring Jack into the show in just a few moments. We'll get to your mailbag questions and we'll go inside the clubhouse, play some audio clips from Craig Counsell over the last couple days. If you missed our last episode earlier in the week, I spoke to Brandon Hyde, who was the first base coach on the 2016 championship team. Good stuff going down memory lane after reunion weekend, so check that out. Now, I also mentioned something on that episode at the beginning I want to get into with Jack in a few minutes. We'll do that as part of our first pitch segment. But first, let's review. The Cubs had a 3-3 homestand, losing this past series to a very desperate Detroit Tigers team. They're, of course, playing to keep Tarek Skubal on their team. Unfortunately, the Cubs lost 2-3 without Skubal even pitching in the series. But Keeter Montero was really good in that series finale. You got to give him credit for that. But, the Cubs are going to face good pitching down the stretch in the playoffs. So they need to be able to break through, which is sometimes a problem, specifically, in my opinion, for this lineup. I brought this up before. When they need to run into a couple home runs against the elite pitching, it's not always easy for them. The one guy that can do it, and we saw it on Wednesday, was Seiya Suzuki. But, of course, he did in the first inning, and then the team did nothing else. They are good against sort of the twos and threes and fours in rotations, as we've seen recently. Very lengthy lineup, has shown up more often than not lately. It just did not on Wednesday night. All right, so the Cubs, 7 games out of first place as we talk on this Thursday, but solidly in wild card position in the National League. Doesn't that sound familiar? I mean, that's basically the same thing that went down last season. And, of course, all this will inform the front office as we head to the trade deadline, which is August 3rd this year. We'll get into that in a moment as well. Good news is the Cubs are slowly starting to get their starters at least healthy. We saw Jameson Taillon return. I know it wasn't a great outing, but he did settle down. Let's see what he can do with an outing under his belt. Edward Cabrera is getting closer, though Daniel Palencia and Ben Brown are still ways away. 2 key arms, thinking mid-August for both, barring a setback. Brown is symptom-free, which is really good news, but it's going to take some time. One other roster note, James Triantos, you may have heard by now, good-looking second-round prospect. They drafted in 2021. He's going to come up and he'll make his MLB debut when he gets into a game. He's going to replace Kevin Alcantara on the roster. Triantos played all over the diamond this year for Iowa, so he could be in the outfield. He could be in the infield. He'll be that extra guy that Alcantara was. Now, Alcantara was only outfield, but he wasn't doing a lot at the plate. We'll see what Triantos can do when he makes his MLB debut. He was hitting .306 in Iowa before the call-up, so good luck to him. All right, so that's the state of the Cubs. As we head to the end of the month and the trade deadline, let's get to our first pitch. All right, our first pitch today is all going to be about that trade deadline. Let's bring producer Jack McGrath in, as he is a diehard fan, has a different view of things as me, a reporter. You know, I've got all sorts of different views on the team than maybe a diehard will, because I have to sort of think of it as a reporter and not so much a fan. So, Jack, I'm going to start with you and ask you right off the bat, what do you want the Cubs to do at the trade deadline?
Well, what do I want them to do? If I had any wish, I would want Tarek Skubal on the team. But I think mainly it's got to be they need a top-end starting pitcher, because right now it doesn't feel like they go into a series with even the Brewers, say, and I don't know that they have a number one that can face the Miz. I don't know that they can go 1-2-3 with the Dodgers or some of the other top teams. So I feel like they need a high-level starting pitcher.
And that's where I have to do a bit of a mea culpa from earlier this week when I talked about this. I really thought they'd concentrate more on the back end, because they at least, Jack, have numbers in the rotation when they're all healthy, right? even if Ben Brown's not stretched out to 90 pitches, he's a good pitcher. He can get you 12 to 15 outs. Tyon on his best day can get to 12 to 15 outs. Cabrera could do the same. I mean, none of these guys are going seven innings toe-to-toe with Mizorowski. I agree with you there. The one guy that might be able to is Matthew Boyd, but probably not as a number one, but certainly the number one on this team. And depending on the day, we know Shota Imanaga has it in him. Didn't materialize last October. Doesn't mean it can't this October. But I don't disagree with you. None of those guys are true number ones. And even if they are number ones on this team, there's not enough twos or threes to battle the Dodgers and the Phillies and even the Brewers, as you mentioned, though I think Milwaukee's looking to pair someone with Mizorowski. So I said early in the week, I really thought they'd concentrate on the back end because that's where all the injuries are, and playoffs are about bullpens. But this bullpen's been okay. I'm not saying they're not going to add. They will. But I think it's both. I think it's both tracks. You add in the bullpen, experience would help. And then, yes, I think you're exactly right, Jack. They do need somebody to pair with Matthew Boyd, let's say, or if Shota's going really good at the end of September, whoever it is, they need one more playoff caliber guy for October, and obviously to help you get to October as well. You can't be pitching four innings in August and September. But the reason I said what I did earlier in the week is because you can do it in October. But what I failed to sort of recognize is, or remember, is you can't really do it for four rounds. You can't be pitching Tyon for four innings, Cabrera for – you guys are just going to wear out. You do need a couple studs if you're going to go four rounds along with a good bullpen. And so they don't have that second stud if Matthew Boyd is, in fact, the first one. And they don't have that third one if Shota is that second one. So – I do think they will look for a Kevin Gausman type, a Robbie Ray type. Here's the thing people aren't talking about. Some of these guys are owed a lot of money, like Robbie Ray, but I assume someone like yourself, Jack, that attends games doesn't care about the money aspect. The Cubs are drawing very well this season.
Well, yeah, especially for the guys who are on those 1 or 2 year deals. It's not like it's going to harm you for the future. I would say just pay them now and go win. Once again, this is the window that the Cubs should be really good. All those top prospects from those 2020-21 trades are up now. It's go time. They're in the wild card spot pretty comfortably right now. They still have that outside shot at the division. For me, you have to establish the rotation because, in my opinion, the offense is good enough to go the distance. So can the rotation catch up is kind of how I view it right now.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned go time. I just don't know if that's really the right answer when you are not going to get the bye, when you are seven back. Let's just assume they'll be about seven back at the deadline. Now, if they're three or four back, maybe that changes the calculus. Is it really go time? I mean, it's go time for the Phillies. It could be go time for the Brewers because they've been knocking on the door and they're going to get the bye as constituted right now in the National League. And certainly we know it's go time for the Dodgers. So, in some sense, I agree with you, Jack. It is. 21 was a long time ago. You've been building this thing up. You signed Alex Bregman. You've been spending money. You're going to pay the tax. In some sense, I agree. However, you lost Cade Horton. You've lost Ben Brown. Justin Steele's been delayed. Like, sometimes it just doesn't feel like all the pieces are coming together here. The puzzle's not really fitting. And are you really going to mortgage a bunch of your future for kind of a roll of the dice in October? I mean, if you get Scuba, that's a different story, okay? But Kevin Gausman, they trashed, and he hasn't pitched well lately. That's why he's on the block, half the reason he's on the block. I mean, Robbie Ray's been fine, but that's a big ballpark. You know, it's a pitcher's ballpark. And that again, that's taking on a lot of money for the rest of this year. I don't know if there's a guy or two out there, really, outside of Scuba that's going to push you over the top. So how much of the future do you mortgage is always the question.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. The thing I view, though, is you have your second baseman locked in for 5-plus years now. You have your center fielder locked in for years and years. Your third baseman's locked in. Your shortstop's locked in. Your first baseman's locked in. So at some point, you have to use the prospects that you have. The only two spots that you're really looking at are left and right field because Suzuki and Hap, we don't know where they're going to go the next few years. But the way I view it right now is for the next 5 years, these prospects are somewhat blocked, assuming the veterans continue to play decently and not get injured. So it's not good to just have them sitting around in the minors. Like Alcantara, maybe someday he can be a big league outfielder on a regular basis. But other than that, like Triantos, for example, they're mm-hmm. bringing up Pedro Ramirez. Where are these guys going to play in the future?
No, it's a good point. That's why I say you can't mortgage everyone, but you can certainly mortgage a few of them. I don't disagree with that. Pedro Ramirez might have the ability to play the outfield. I mean, Matt Shaw probably is their starting left fielder next year. I think Pedro Ramirez is going to remain on this team through the deadline. It's not often you have to subtract from your major league team when you're contending in order to add on. It's usually prospects. You're right about Triantos. For all we know, he's coming up to get a little showcase. I think you're right. He's probably blocked. I don't think Kevin Alcantara is part of this future. I just don't. He's been given chances. And, yeah, they're limited, but he hasn't exactly grabbed them. He's made mistakes on the bases. I think Kevin Alcantara is an add-on to a trade, and you just cross your fingers that another team thinks more highly of Kevin Alcantara than you might. I think you mortgage some of it for sure, but I would not trade Matt Shaw. And I've done a little bit of a 180 on even Pedro Ramirez because I do think the floor is high for him, and I was saying – previously on the radio, I didn't think the ceiling was high, but you know what? He's a switch hitter, play a bunch of positions. If he learns the outfield, which I think he could, he becomes a little bit more valuable. So I wouldn't trade him either. And part of the strength of this group, Jack, is the surplus, is the depth. They don't have Schwarber, Otani, Judge. I've said this a million times. The best they have is Suzuki, which is fine. But the strength is the length of the lineup. MPC, I mean, the best they have is PCA and Suzuki. The length of the lineup, the surplus, the depth, the defense, that's who they are. That's their identity. You rip that up, you rip that apart, and you've got problems moving forward. They want as many, here's my summation of it. They want as many kicks at the can as they can get. And I think in that 1 year where it all comes together, you're healthy, the Brewers take a step back, you take another step forward, you're in line for the bye, that's when you really go big like they did in 2016. Having said that, you certainly have to give this team a better chance because of all the injuries. You can't just go into August, September and hoping, crossing your fingers, all these guys come back and are great. You do have to give this team a better chance, but I don't think it's the year to go all in. I just don't. Look at the playoff odds, and I don't like, the game isn't played on a computer, Jack, but it gives you a chance to visualize things. And think of it this way. They have an over 80% chance of getting in the playoffs, according to Fangraphs, but just a 3% chance of winning the World Series. So, yeah, you want to improve both those odds, but there's not that much room to improve from 80%. I mean, you're never going to get to 99%, right, as constituted with all the injuries. But if you get to 85, 86, you'll take that. And how much does that improve your World Series odds to 4 or 5%? As a fan, Jack, how do you feel about that when I start reciting odds to you? Because, again, the game is not played via a computer.
No, I get that, but I look at it. I guess it depends who they get, right? If we're talking Tarek Skubal, the Tigers can have Matt Shaw. That's okay. Ship him out and go get the best pitcher in baseball. And you can ship out Alcantara and one or two other prospects. And I'm happy because that bumps you up from, you mentioned that 3% chance to being like a 10% chance, in my opinion, because you're putting the best pitcher in the game on the mound for two games per seven game series. So I think that's a huge, huge bump up. If you're getting one of these guys that's just okay, which you have a lot of pretty okay pitchers right now, then I get what you're saying. You want as many tries as possible, and you can build for the future still. But I just, the way the Cubs have been spending recently, which has been better than it has been in the past, the way they have these guys signed up, every single chance I feel is valuable, and I just feel like you can go for it right now. But I do understand what you're saying, because they're going to be locked in a three-game series to open it up, because unless they pull off a miracle and catch the Brewers in a three-game series, is a crapshoot. We saw in 2020, they were the much better team than the Miami Marlins, and they lost to the Miami Marlins in a shortened season. So it's a crapshoot when you get in that three-game series. So to that degree, I do understand.
All right, final point on this, Jack, is I actually think for Skubal, let's pretend Ben Brown is healthy. Let's pretend Ben Brown is healthy. I think if you're going to get Scooble, it would cost you Ben Brown in minor league prospects. That's what I think. I don't think it's Matt Shaw. I think it's a major league ready pitcher that is already looking pretty good in Ben Brown. That would hurt. It's got to hurt. It's got to hurt to get Scooble.
I mean, that doesn't make sense for the Cubs. Because well, you want Ben Brown to come back and be what he was at the start of the season.
Let's put it this way. This is the type of deal that the Tigers are going to ask for from teams. Maybe the Cubs say no, but it won't be just four prospects, in my opinion. It'll be a major league ready pitcher because you got to replace the pitcher you just lost and two or three other prospects as well. And, you know, the better the pitching prospect like Ben Brown, maybe the worse the minor league prospects have to be and vice versa. So anyway, I don't know. Everyone keeps telling me the Tigers are in it, so maybe they keep Scooble. So that might be fantasy land kind of thinking anyway. So again, I do think they're going to get a pitcher that is capable of pitching in October. Is he going to be Sandy Koufax? No, unless it is Scooble. But it's going to be better than what they have. And then they need arms in the bullpen. They need healthy arms in the bullpen. Guys that they can pick up and maybe stash in the minors or push their own guys down in the minors. You know, pick up some experience and stash a couple of your own guys in the minors in case there's injuries down the stretch. All right, so that's some trade deadline conversation. We'll pick it up again next week. Let's go inside the clubhouse next.
Inside the Friendly Confines with Jesse Rogers, presented by Arlington Toyota. Looking for a smart play on your next vehicle? Arlington Toyota delivers with a full lineup of dependable cars, SUVs, and trucks ready for Chicago drivers. The same trusted team you've known for years is now backed by new ownership from the Andy Moore Auto Group, bringing even more value every day. Visit ToyotaArlington.com today.
All right, let's go inside the clubhouse, bring you some audio clips from the locker room. In this case, three of them from Craig Counsell. I want to give some love to Michael Conforto. And this is what I talked about with Jack last segment. The depth of this team is really a strength, and Michael Conforto is a good illustration of it. Four pinch-hit home runs, tied with Glenn Allen Hill with the most in a season. And, of course, we still have a couple months left. Here's what Craig Counsell had to say about Michael Conforto.
I thought he just came into the season like in a really good place. And this, in terms of like, this is a person who's a player who's accomplished a lot in his career. You know, he's been a starter. He's signed big contracts. He's a first round pick. You know, he's a big prospect. He's played in New York. He's played in L.A. He's played in San Francisco. So he's done a lot. And I think, you know, I don't think he was happy with how he played last year. And that there was, I'm not sure, but he's the best way to describe it, he's confident yet very humble. And I think that allows him to be good at the job that he's currently in. So he's not wondering why he's not playing. He's just getting ready for the next time he's going to play.
Now, I hope to have Conforto on this podcast at some point because I'm fascinated with pinch hitters that really know how to handle themselves sitting for as many days as they do or as many innings as they do every day and then get ready and go out there and do it. I was pretty tight with my old pal Tommy La Stella back in the day, who was the pinch hitter extraordinaire for the championship team in 16 and during that era. And it was fascinating to hear him talk about getting ready for a game. So Conforto has kind of embraced that role, which is key, as Counsell said. He's not thinking about, am I in the lineup the next day? Am I in the lineup the next day? I think he's pleasantly surprised when he is starting and more than ready when he isn't. All right, going back to Counsell, he spoke on PCA as he does nearly every day, and he did on this podcast. If you missed Craig Counsell, that was before the All-Star break I had him on. Can never get old listening to people talk about PCA and his advancements this year. And what Counsell talked about was what I was saying back in April. His at-bats against left-handed pitching foreshadowed all the success to come. Here's Craig Counsell on PCA.
But I think it started against left-handed pitching. I think he improved against left-handed. His plate discipline improved against left-handed pitching first this year. And, you know, one of the things he did is he moved up on the plate. You know, I think there's been some conversations with Alex that he's, that have helped him as well. But if you think about moving up on the plate, it's like, and I kind of equate that to like what, how Anthony Rizzo, if you Anthony Rizzo at one point in his career moved up on the plate, and then for most of his career against, he was just right on top of the plate against left-handed pitching especially. So it helped him, I think, better define the strike zone. And so we saw the improvement against left-handed pitching first. But the rate at which it's improved and how fast it's improved, like I don't have any comparisons to it. I don't have a great explanation for it. It's just I think it's a great athlete coming into his own as a great player.
Now, after Council said that, I actually asked him also about Pete's commitment to having better at bats, because yes, the athleticism, the skill, all that is important. But in my opinion, if you're not committed, as he kind of mentioned in the offseason, if you're not committed, then you're not going to walk more. You're just not. And I think the commitment came first back in the winter, and then he took that to spring training, took that into the beginning of the season, had better at-bats against lefties, used those better at-bats and implemented them against righties, and now you're seeing sort of the fruits of all that labor. So it's the commitment and then using your skill and your know-how to implement all that and become a better hitter. So I commend him in all areas, as I'm sure everybody listening does as well. All right, final cut. Just a thought on the next little while as the Cubs start a divisional road trip. Here's Craig Counsell.
I mean, I just think of it like we're going on the road to play two teams that are good teams and that are in it. These are big games from that perspective. I don't think about it as much from the division perspective, but I just think these are just two good teams that we're going to play. And, you know, you're getting to the point where these are big series.
That's right. End of July, getting to August. They're all going to turn into big series soon enough. I love this time of year. I especially love it after the deadline when everybody's teams are set. No more moves. This is who we are. Let's go do it for about 2 months. Cubs approaching that. And then remember, Pittsburgh and St. Louis, like Detroit, are going to play a little bit more desperate because they need to inform their front offices what direction they need to go in. The Cubs are in a really good position. I think the front office knows what to do. What do the Pirates do? What do the Cardinals do? Well, the final couple weeks here before the deadline are going to tell a lot about their stories as well. So very desperate divisional games coming up between the Cubs and Pirates and Cubs and Cardinals as well. Time for our mailbag segment. We do this every episode in which we don't have a guest. Let's bring producer Jack McGrath back on. First of all, Jack, where can people leave questions?
Yeah, so you can leave questions in our YouTube comments. So just put that in the bottom of this YouTube video if you're watching the podcast on YouTube, or tweet me at JackMcGrath1000 and we can answer. I'll see those and I can ask Jesse those and we can answer those on the podcast.
All right, what do you got for me today?
So the first one, it comes from Thomas. He says, why is James Triantos being called up? Seems like the infield is a little crowded.
Well, he has been playing some outfield. He can play center, left, or right, so he's a bit of a backup there. I just think that Kevin Alcantara really hasn't cut it so far, and Triantos has earned it. Like I mentioned earlier, his guy's hitting over 300. He's highly touted. Maybe they're showcasing him a bit for a trade. That's always a possibility at this time of year. So it's always about trying to be a little bit better than you were yesterday, and I think they want to go with sort of the unknown over the known, which is Alcantara right now, who's not producing much. So I think that's the reason for his call-up.
This question from Twitter, if the Cubs don't sign Happ or Suzuki next offseason, who do you think is going to be in the outfield?
Well, right off the bat, Matthew Shaw. Let's already say it. Well, he's already been out there, right? I don't know if it's right field or left field. It all depends. I also would not dismiss completely Pedro Ramirez learning the outfield for next year. I don't know if that would be as a starter, maybe, but just as another place he can play. I don't think they're ready to do it this year, but I think he's smart enough, athletic enough, and good enough at the plate where you want him. If he's on this team next year, I would not be surprised if he's learning some outfield. So Matt Shaw takes one spot. So the other spot's either Pedro Ramirez, the person's not on the team, or some other direction. I don't think it's going to be Kevin Alcantara getting an everyday spot next year. So that's kind of my opinion on it in late July. We have a long way to go till next year. But Shaw takes one spot. I'm pretty sure of that.
Raphael asks, are the Cubs more likely to acquire a high-end starter or high-end reliever?
So if you asked me earlier in the week, Jack, I would have said high-end reliever, but I'm kind of torn now. When we talk high-end, probably a starter. When we talk just quantity, probably relievers. First of all, there aren't that many high-end relievers available this year. There were last year. I don't think the Cubs are getting Mason Miller, so cross him off. If you cross him off, there aren't that many high-end guys out there. There's good middle guys, but not big names, where Kevin Gausman's a bigger name, Robbie Ray's a bigger name. So compared to reliever, I would say high-end starter, even if it's not Tarek Skubal.
And this one related to a potential lockout of the 2027 season. Travis asks, if the baseball season is canceled next year, what happens to the All-Star game at Wrigley? Is it pushed back a year? Will it just be off the table? What happens to that All-Star game?
I believe it's pushed back 2 years. I don't think that's official because nobody wants to discuss the idea of missing an All-Star game. I don't think it'd be 28. It would be 29 because 28, it is coinciding with the Olympics in LA, and if Major League players play, they wanted the All-Star game out west anyway, so I think 28's in San Francisco, so I believe it'd be 29, but nothing's official about that. Wrigley would not permanently lose the All-Star game. All right, that's going to do it for our mailbag segment and for this episode. Thanks for listening, for watching. If you're on YouTube, we'll talk to you next week as we inch closer to the trade deadline. Enjoy the weekend of baseball.